your friends and loved ones on air. So whether you are behind bars and reaching out, or are out and reaching in, we welcome you to mail or email us your Valentine's messages. Our email address is kbooppc@gmail.com, and our address is 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Address your messages to Prison Pipeline Collective. Then tune in on February 15th at 6:30 p.m. to hear your messages read on air.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the West Coast premiere of What Every Girl Should Know, produced by Triangle Productions. The play runs from February 4th through the 27th at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza in Portland. What Every Girl Should Know takes place in a Catholic reformatory in 1914 during Margaret Sanger's campaign for wider access to birth control and deals with the effects of denying women control over their own bodies. Due to the subject matter, those under 14 need to be accompanied by an adult. Again, that's What Every Girl Should Know, February 4th through the 27th at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Bread and Roses, Feminist News and Public Affairs. I am your host, Nia Nguyen, and our engineer tonight is Chris. We have two special guests with us tonight, student activists at PSU, Mason Mimi and April Swartz-Larsen. Tonight, the show is called Neoliberalism and the Academic Industrial Complex. We'll be talking about the forces that are trying to get in control of the student power movement. Bread and Roses is a collective of women-identified radio activists. We give voice to those working for social justice and equity globally and locally, and we strive to challenge systems of oppression. All this, and we have fun. We always welcome new collective members, no experience necessary. To find out about how you can host, produce, or engineer with us, you can contact KBOO's volunteer coordinator at volunteer@kboo.org. That's volunteer@kboo.org. Make sure to like KBOO Bread and Roses on Facebook to get updates and see behind-the-scenes photos. We are also on Twitter at Bread Roses Radio and on the web at www.kboo.fm/Bread and Roses. That's all one word for the Bread and Roses. There you can listen to past shows and leave us comments and show ideas. You can also email us suggestions at breadandrosescollective@gmail.com. Tonight, the show focuses on neoliberalism and the academic industrial complex, and our hosts are, we're going to be talking about the those institutions like neoliberalism that are trying to hijack academia and take it and basically mess it up for a lot of poor people and people of color and marginalized people. I've got my two hosts with me. I'm just going to let them introduce themselves. So, April.
Yeah, I'm April. I use they, them pronouns. I am a first year student at Portland State University. I don't have a major. I spend most of my time organizing with the Portland State University Student Union.
Cool.
I'm Mason. I use they, them pronouns, and this is my second year at PSU. I'm either looking at majoring in child and family studies or social work, not totally sure yet. And I also organize in the PSU Student Union.
So I want to like begin the conversation by asking why you two do activist work. So I'll start with you, Mason. Why do you do activist work, especially the work that's going on at PSU right now with the student movement?
Yeah, so I came from a really small town in Central Oregon, and being at all radical there was not allowed, basically. It wasn't something that I could at all participate in any valuable way other than, you know, learning for myself. And so coming to PSU and finding the PSU Student Union and like realizing there's so much austerity in the university system and it's not something that they make you privy to. And so I was like, this is obviously something that I have to do if I'm going to be a student here. Because I'm anti-capitalist and I'm radical and it's an important fight to me. And so that's why I do this.
That's awesome. I'm anti-capitalist. April.
I also grew up in a community where radicalism and even just mainstream liberal ideology was not really acceptable in Texas. And so I moved to Portland to get away from that. But I also, as a radical and anti-capitalist, I was looking for a way to act upon all the kind of ideologies that I have associated myself with and have spent a lot of time learning about. And the student union is just, it provides that opportunity for me and just for all of us to like work together and on a lot of different issues that are really important to me and that really need to change.
And you both are part of SUSU?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mason, can you tell us what SUSU does and what they are? Well, what we have been doing. I'm in SUSU too, so what? what kind of action do we do and what are we trying to, what is our motive
for
activism?
SUSU, which is PSUSU, the PSU Student Union. The reason why it sounds like SUSU is because we pronounce the P silent.
Yes.
Some people don't know that, so I feel like I should explain.
Thank you.
But yeah, SUSU is a student group on campus fighting against the austerity that exists in the university system. The biggest campaign, which pretty much every PSU student union actually, PSU student actually has heard about at this point, is the Disarm PSU campaign.
Right.
Because they have armed the campus security, and SUSU is not about that for very real reasons. You know, police target people of color and gender queer people and anyone who's a minority, they get targeted by police. And so that has been SUSU's biggest fight, but also focusing on the lowering down to free tuition and working very closely with faculty unions and staff unions and other student groups. Because solidarity is very important. So SUSU is basically a radical student group on the PSU campus.
Awesome. So I guess I can just like start this like discussion by talking about the academic industrial complex and like how neoliberalism, which April will give us some more information and let some illuminate us on that, like why neoliberalism, but like basically the academic industrial complex is they have privatized and hijacked education, academia, and now education is really not about opening up your mind and being in intellectual conversation and discussions with different people and that knowledge that's being passed around. Instead, it's just about profits. And April, can you talk a little bit about neoliberalism?
Yeah. So neoliberalism, it is basically the idea of supposed economic freedom, mm-hmm. And the idea of free markets, and just it's just basically it's associated as starting in the 1980s with the Reagan administration, and
I mean it has backbone in like just like the American dream too, like the American creed, right?
Yeah,
it's like free economy, free markets, like liberalism, like
laissez-faire
kind
of. Yeah, it's just the continuation of capitalism.
Right.
In America.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Continue. Sorry.
You're good. And so a lot of what started to happen in the 80s and throughout the 90s was a lot of lowered government spending, deregulation, privatization of a lot of formerly public things like universities, and really just a resurgence in the idea that, like, if you work hard for yourself, you should receive all the benefits of that and not really worry about anything else. Neoliberalism really affects different marginalized people, different marginalized groups.
Mm-hmm.
It's responsible for, you know, lower and middle class people being denied healthcare and education and housing and things like that. It's also responsible for the militarization of the police and military, and we see that on the Portland State campus, but we also see that across the nation in any neoliberal type of state. More on the like university side of it and how it's affected college campuses. A lot of increases in tuition over the past 30 years, and cuts in programs like for arts and languages and things like that, and increases in funding for math and
science
and the STEM industry and engineering, and also a lot of spending for sports and athletics. A lot of the money for salaries ends up going to administration rather than professors and faculty on campus. And a lot of professors and faculty on campus end up being in extreme poverty, while the administrators of the school end up being paid in like six-digit figures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who is the president at our school?
Vim Favelle.
Vim Favelle. Yes. How much is he getting paid?
Over $600,000 a year.
Yeah, I heard he has a maid. Not a maid. Yeah, a maid,
yeah,
right?
He has a maid. He has a butler. He has a car. He has a mansion. That are not... He doesn't have to pay for those, too. They're included.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, over $600,000. And then those things.
Yeah, with benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, why don't we talk about the student power movement? What is it? Like, what is it?
Yeah, so the modern student power movement that's been going on for the past 5 or 10 years, it does have similarities with the student power movements of the 60s and 70s, but...
Like, you're talking about, like the Kent State?
Yeah.
Movements?
Yeah. Movements like that. And so we were talking about neoliberalism. Neoliberalism kind of took off because of all those student movements from the 60s and 70s, and also all the other activist movements during that time. So although the student movement now has a lot of similarities to that, to the earlier student movements, we're kind of fighting the response from that, like the backlash from that. So there's been a lot of these student movements going on across the world. Like in South Africa, they had... just in last October, I believe, they had a campaign going on called Fees Must Fall, and that was fighting for lowering tuition and allowing more students more lower income students to be able to participate in higher education. There was something going on in India, there was the Quebec Student Union a couple years ago that fought for lowering tuition, and they actually were able to win that fight. So
that's where SUSU got its inspiration, actually.
Yeah, a lot of SUSU, a lot of our goals and like how we run our organization is based upon the Quebec Student Unions.
I mean, like a lot of the student power movements, like we're all kind of working in tandem with each other,
exactly.
Too. Yeah. You know, like it's happening all over the country.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, continue with
it. You're good. A lot of it is happening right now. Just in the past 6 months, it's really taken off. A lot of it has been associated with the Black Lives Matter movement because we're all fighting, not the same fight, but fights. We're all fighting the fight that, like, of capitalism, basically, like,
yeah,
like, I mean,
what capitalism has done to us,
yes,
all.
How it affects different marginalized people and students, and so, like, for example, at the University of Missouri, they were fighting the administration not recognizing different like hate crimes, basically happening.
Like what kind of hate crimes? You know,
I believe the like student body president or whatever, the head of the student government there was a Black man, and he had been called racial slurs and different things like that. And he actually recorded a video of that on YouTube, and it blew up over national media. But then the administration's response was very slow and just didn't really address it, very much respectability politics kind of thing. And then slowly more people at the University of Missouri started paying attention to that because a group called, let's see, what were they? Concerned Student 1950 at the University of, they started rallying around the school, and they had a rally outside of a football game one night talking about how like racism is on the campus and how the administration doesn't do anything about it. And I mean, and it all correlates to like how tuition has been raised there and how you know, there are a lot of people of color in that community, but a very disproportionate amount of people of color not attending the university. And just also the curriculum there, which is, you know, one of the consequences of the of neoliberalism, that it's much less like social sciences oriented and much less around actually critically thinking about the system. So across the nation, there are like cuts to like Black studies programs and women's studies programs and stuff like that. So they also talked about that. And it culminated kind of in one student going on a hunger strike. And then the whole football team ended up boycotting and saying they wouldn't play games or like practice or anything until the president of the university resigned. And the president of the university ended up resigning.
Yeah.
There was also
Claremont. Oh no, I'm sorry.
You're good. There was something at the University of Cincinnati, I believe, that the group, I think it's called the Irate Eight. Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, after campus police, they had been armed on the University of Cincinnati campus. They shot and murdered an unarmed Black man named Sam DeBose. And so that was in the summer of 2015. And so the Irate Eight kind of started demonstrating at that campus. And they have a list of demands, much like has been seen at the University of Missouri and at Portland State. And that's kind of a common theme of the student power movement right now, is the demands are regarding faculty and professors not getting paid enough, student workers on campus not getting paid enough, administration being paid too much.
and so many problems at PSU, like just like even like the racism that happens like on campus, like, and then the students trying to seek some help from the faculty, and the faculty like is just not prepared or just ill equipped to deal with these isms that like are happening on a day to day basis.
Yeah, like, they get like no training. Mm-hmm.
There's like, all these like hurdles and hoops that the students have to jump through, and then before you know.
Yeah.
So, why don't we take a little short break with a music? So, April, do you want to introduce your song?
Yeah, the song I picked is Rebel Without a Pause by Public Enemy, and Public Enemy rocks. They're a great group, very influential.
Awesome. Enjoy.
Brothers and sisters! Brothers and sisters! I don't know what this world is coming to!
Yes! The rhythm, the rebel, without a pause, I'm lowering my level. The hard rhyme, where you never been, I'm in. You want styling? You know it's time again. D, the enemy, telling you to hear it. They praise the music, it's time to play the lyrics. Some say no to the album, the show. Bum rush the sound, I made a year ago. I guess you know, you guess I'm just a radical. Not on sabbatical, yes, to make it critical. The only part of your body should be part of it too. Pass the power on the hour from the rebel to you.
Hey, yo, Chuck, man, I'm
never play me all the mix. They just okay me now, knowing it grow. When the clock in my zone is no sneaking and taking everything that the brother owns. My calling card, recorded and ordered. Supporter of Chess and Mart, loud and proud. Kicking live, next poet supreme. Loop for truth, bazooka, the scheme.
Flavor,
a rebel in his own mind. Supporter of my rhyme, designed to scatter a line of suckers who claim I do crime. They are my time, dig it.
Hey, yo, Chuck, I think we take it short.
The power of my label, Def Jam, tells you who I am. The enemy's public, they really give a damn. Strong Island, where I got a wildin'. That's the reason they're claiming that I'm violent. Never silent, no dope, getting dumb, nope. Claiming where we get our rhythm from. Number one, we hit you and we give you some. No gun, it's still never on the run. You wanna be an F1, Griffin tell you when, and then you come again. You know what time it is, MP's the president. Pulling out my ray gun, zap the next one. Shogun.
Suckers.
Don't last a minute. Soft and smooth, I ain't with it.
Hardcore.
Raw bone like a razor. I'm like a laser, I just won't phase ya. Old enough to raise ya, so this will phase ya. Get it right, boy, maybe I will praise ya. Playing a role I got sold to. Voice my opinion with volume.
Smooth.
Not what I am.
Rock.
Cause I'm a man, no matter what the name. We're all the same pieces in one big chess game.
And we're back. I'm Nia.
I'm April.
I'm Mason.
And we're talking about the neoliberalism and the student power movement. So let's turn the conversation over to Mason and Mason, can you like share what's going on at PSU right now as far as like our student movement? Like, what's happening right now?
Yeah. So I've been in SUSU for about a year and a half now. Starting off right away, coming in, we were focused on the Disarm PS movement back in fall 2014 and before that. It just didn't have that name or hashtag yet. That came along just this past fall, actually. Mm-hmm. But yeah, last winter, so the winter of 2014, was the first board meeting where there was an action from SUSU regarding this issue. And
so I have a question. What is the Board of Trustees' reasoning for arming PSU?
So the Board of Trustees were presented from Kevin Reynolds, who's something with the Chief of Finance. Mm-hmm. He was the main one who presented like this really big argument for why they should have armed police officers. And some of the reasons were stuff like it'll help prevent sexual assault because somehow guns are supposed to do that. And then later it was like people talked about it more, and it's apparently because it has a detective within the clause of this. It's very sketchy. Either way, it doesn't do that.
Yeah, but they also forget that cops are also the one that are like sexually assaulting.
They never talk about that.
Of course they're not going to talk about that.
That's very real. But that was one of their reasonings.
And homelessness, right?
Yeah, and they... Because PSU is in an urban setting and it's such an open campus that one of their reasonings was that it was going to prevent homeless people from being on campus or doing anything to people on campus, which is not good reasoning to begin with, because it sounds like their solution is to just shoot people who can't find proper housing, who are struggling in this capitalist economy. Mm-hmm. Their solution is to shoot them or to arrest them.
And we understand that Portland right now is in a rental crisis.
Yeah,
a lot of people are being pushed. Yeah, a housing crisis. Yeah. A lot of people are being pushed out. So there are a lot of houseless people right now.
Especially right now, and it's freezing outside most nights. And but their solution is to just kick them off this campus, even though there's so many great spots for people to just chill out and not be doing anything to anyone. But yeah, that was a lot of their sort of reasoning behind it. And so the Board of Trustees is new. I think they're only about 2 years in. It's a new kind of structure at PSU. And so that first board meeting, winter of 2014, SUSU hosted a die-in. And so it was... in the University Point Hotel, and we did a die-in. You walk in, and there's like a room that's like a, I guess like a standing room. Mm-hmm. And then there's like the actual room where the meeting was. And so we did the die-in right there, and you know, we had all the board members walk right over our bodies, not even care to ask, hey, what's up? They just walked right over our bodies.
I know this is basic, but what is a die-in, why is it important?
So the die-ins are it's essentially you go to a space and you occupy it, and very specifically you lay down and essentially act like you're dead, and you're just laying in a space holding that space.
Your body's just like right in front of the Board of Trustees, like these sources of power, you know, that control.
And it was definitely important because they needed to know there's student pushback, there's student power movements on this campus. And in general, they're important because they're a way to occupy space. They're a way to make people look directly at the people that they are pushing down. But that was that first action. And then, I mean, it wasn't necessarily the first, but it was the first big one regarding this, because there's definitely been so many other actions within all of this. And then going up to the, quite frank,
How did the Board of Trustees react to that? Like, as you were all laying down there and they were walking over your quote, I'm sorry, your supposed dead bodies.
Like as they're walking over
As they're walking over you.
Yeah, like, I distinctly remember some, I actually got some photos of some of them too walking over us. It was really just kind of a look of like, these kids don't know what they're doing. Like, it was very much a, okay, this is great, like, haha, student activism, but no inkling of like wanting to talk about the issue with us until we kept pushing them, because they realized we weren't gonna stop. We weren't gonna be like, okay, we did this one thing
action. Like, that was the first instant that they got like, from SUSU.
That we like interacted directly with them, because then we also had public comment within that. We had a mic check also. We made it very clear that we are going to work within your system to make sure you listen to us, and we're going to disrupt your system because mm-hmm. their system is not sustainable.
Right.
And then there was another board meeting in the spring, which was one that was focused more on tuition. Mm-hmm. And that one was also very big. It kind of almost shut down the meeting. There's a lot of noise making because it was not only Susu, because Susu is definitely not the only students fighting for this. Like, it's all about solidarity. There's other student groups. There's especially the OSA, the Oregon Student Association, mm-hmm. been very, very helpful in our fight for for everything that Susu does and everything other student groups do as well. And then there's also, though, going into fall of 2015, there was the new student convocation, which is a yearly thing that is hosted to welcome in new freshmen mm-hmm. or just new students, I guess. And it has quite a few different people speaking at it, but the big one that we were going that we did interrupt was Vin Vivel, the university president. And so we when he started his speech, we had three rounds of people that went up to interrupt him, and we finished it out by just chanting "Disarm PSU" over and over, because we needed to make it very crucially clear to all those new students sitting there. There was hundreds of students in there, and we were able to drown him out. And April was one of
April. You won. Yeah. What was your reaction to that? Like, what were you? Obviously, it worked because you know.
Yeah. Yes, I responded well. Yeah, I was sitting in the audience, been at PSU like 3 days, and yeah. as soon as Olivia got up, she was the first person to mic check. I immediately heard like "Disarm" and "Black Lives Matter" and immediately got up and was like, mm-hmm. "All right, these are the people I'm following."
Yeah, because we had a rally right outside. Mm-hmm. Like, if you looked out of that window of the room, you would see our rally, because we wanted students to not only listen but to actually come, which April was one of the ones. But the very specific reason is because Vim likes to talk about diversity in this university system and how great it is for students of different backgrounds and different, like, all these other words that he likes to throw out.
Oh yeah, recently we had at school we had a student of color speak out, and he yeah. like or the administration said that they wanted to capitalize on diversity.
Yeah. And they had that in a 5-year strategic plan. They said they're going to capitalize on the diversity that's coming into PSU. And they changed the language because there's so many students. And it just goes to show that it's some people like to think that it's just Susu that's being like this radical, loud group on campus. It's just like this small group of people that is doing this. But it's not true at all.
No, there's
been
so, many
so much pushback. Yeah.
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, not everyone can get involved in the length that like me or April can right now. Like, there's so many other factors that go into this.
Right.
So, and that's definitely something that Vim doesn't grasp. He kind of thinks it's just like a small group of people, but that's not true.
Yeah, but we were talking about like how Susu is not associated with, you know, the administration or mm-hmm. doesn't have to.
Yeah, we're not a student or a self-recognized group. SALP being the Student Activities and Leadership Programming Board. Mm-hmm. We're not recognized within that system.
Yeah, and so like all of the other organizations at school
mm-hmm, exactly, yeah.
that are recognized, they have to really police their own language mm-hmm, and definitely. Behavior when they're talking to the administration.
Mm-hmm. And even, you know, like resource centers and stuff like that are within the university. And so mm-hmm. that's kind of just the struggle that Susu mostly encounters, is that we are able to say everything that we feel and think about this, but some people really can't do that for various reasons. But yeah.
So so you disrupted that student orientation,
student, yeah.
but did it end, or what happened?
Actually, I heard that it ended after that. Is that mm-hmm. correct or no? Well, April walked out, right?
I walked out, so I'm not exactly
yeah, cause,
sure.
Yeah, I've actually never been clear on exactly what happened, because we took up about 15 minutes of that mm-hmm. time. So it was his entire speaking time, actually, like more than his speaking time, probably. Mm-hmm. But we drowned him out, and we it got to the point where they like shut, like, or they put all the lights back on, and like we're just like we don't know what to do. And then I heard that they ushered students out like a completely different way. And so I think it effectively did stop the orientation. Mm. But I've never been totally clear on that, because after that it was like rushing into the rally and like figuring out like all the next parts. And so.
Right. And then the action after that was?
The next action after that was this past December, December 10th mm-hmm. or 11th.
Yeah, December 10th, yeah.
I always forget which exact day. But yeah, it was December 10th. It was another Board of Trustees meeting. And this was one where we had considerably more people standing with us, which is amazing because it was finals week, which is something the board has done every time. They've always had their meetings during finals week, which is very rough for students. And we shut their board meeting down as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we took our places standing in front. We had 14 people go stand in front of each of the board members, and we extended public comment because they only have a very small amount of time for public comment.
Yeah,
it's definitely not enough and for them to be able to hear student voices, because they always say, yeah, we have this public comment, we're listening, and most of the time, actually, if you look at them physically, they're not even listening. They like no indication of like listening to what the people are saying during public comment.
Yeah, I mean, like, even like before the this particular action, there was the a little mini action in which I was a part of, where we took over the public, was it at the public comment with Vim Vavelle, and like we actually got to speak
to
him.
Open hours.
Yeah. That's right. Which, like, there were a lot of complications even just trying to get to, like, mm-hmm. Because the first week, his secretary, I think it was Brittany. Brittany, right? She was like, oh, he's not, like, he decided to change, I think that was he changed the hours. So we couldn't even speak mm-hmm. to him. And then the following week, when I got to speak to him, I got to sit down and tell him why I think it's dangerous to arm PSU, because I'm mm-hmm. a trans woman of color, and that, like, a lot of trans women of color have to deal with cops. They gender our they police our gender.
Yeah.
And a lot of trans women are very much attacked by cops. Like, I was just like walking down the street. I was like, yeah, granted, I did jaywalk, but like there was nobody in the street, but a cop pulled me over, mm-hmm. you know, like just walking in an empty street. So I told Vim Vavelle to his face that this makes me really uneasy. And I told him, I was like, you work for us. You have to do something about this. You have to listen to me. And he said directly to my face, I do not work for you. I work mm-hmm. for the Board of Trustees.
Yeah.
So that was a clear indication for me where he stands with the support that he gives to the students.
Yeah, definitely.
So back to what you were saying with the action where we all interrupted the Board of Trustees. What happened after that?
So it got to a point where they were trying to say that they wanted to reason with us. And so they said, okay, you can finish this up right now, and then we need to continue the meeting. But we weren't stopping. We were going to keep letting people do their public comment, because these are comments that they're obviously not listening to.
Yeah.
That covers a ride. It's not one thing.
Yeah,
it's
they
like
left
so many
their
room.
They left that room, and then they decided
they
broadcasted
were going
to broadcast it, because we have to have a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. So we were still in their room, and a lot of people did wind up leaving, but we were sitting in their room at their table, and they were in another room just blasting it into the room that we were sitting in. Yeah.
So let's take another short break with a song, you know, and then we continue after. Mason, do you want to introduce this song that you...
Yeah. The song is called Vampires Are For Posers, Song for the Living, and it's by Ramshackle Glory, which is a really great band, and I think they're not a band anymore, sadly, but they were really great.
1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3...
You can set a watch by the bottle returns, and the ashes.
Welcome back to Red and Roses, listeners. I'm your host, Nia Nguyen, and we're talking about the student power movement. We're talking about SUSU and the actions we have done to disrupt the system that is trying to... I want to cuss. I'm sorry. mess up our education and our ability to get an education. Mm-hmm. So I was, before we took that little song break, I was talking with Mason about the Board of Trustees meeting and disrupting that. And basically, they didn't just leave the room, but they had a retaliation after that for SUSU. They sent out some letters to some of the activists, the student activists in SUSU, and Mason. Can you talk a little bit about what happened? Right, that wasn't exactly right after that, right? That was like when we got
about
back
a month,
to yeah. a month ago. And how many students?
There was about five or six students that got letters from the administration. They were saying that the students had violated the student code of conduct.
Well, why don't you read the letter mm-hmm. to us? Okay. Who sent this?
So it says it's from the... says sincerely at the end, Nicole Morris, Interim Director of Conduct and Community Standards, Office of the Dean of Student Life, and Portland State University. So it's from those three departments.
Okay,
so it says, the Office of the Dean of Student Life addresses allegations that a student has violated the Code of Student Conduct and Responsibility. During the December 10th, 2015, PSU Board of Trustees meeting, several students disrupted the meeting and ignored requests of the chair to allow the meeting to continue normally. The disruption was so significant that the board was forced to recess and reconvene its meeting in another location in order to conduct its business. The remainder of the meeting was broadcast to the public meeting room via speaker. This conduct, if substantiated, would violate one or more subsections of the PSU Student Code of Conduct. You are receiving this letter because I have identified you as one of the students who engaged in this conduct. Pursuing student conduct violations is not a preferred method of addressing students who wish to present information to the board or to other university officials. Accordingly, in lieu of adjudicating, that's a weird
adjudicating.
Word. Yeah, your specific involvement in the disruption of the board meeting. You're receiving this letter as a courtesy and a reminder that this behavior does not align with PSU community standards and the expectations set forth in the student code of conduct. More specifically, this conduct, if substantiated, would violate one or more subsections of Section 5 of the Code of Conduct. 1. Obstruction or disruption of teaching, classroom, research, administration, disciplinary procedures, or other authorized university activities. 8. Inciting others to engage in any of the conduct or to perform any of the acts prohibited in this code. 25. Failure to comply with a university official's request. Students and recognized student organizations and groups are expected to comply with and respond appropriately to requests of university officials made in the performance of their duties. It is the student's responsibility to understand and comply with university policies, including the student code of conduct. While you are not being charged with a conduct violation at this time, future reports of violations of the code of conduct may result in student conduct action against you. The university will enforce the code of conduct as necessary to protect the integrity of the public process and to allow for an opportunity for all, not just a few, to participate in board meetings and other university activities. Please contact me at the Dean of Student Life office, that has a number in the email, if you have questions about this letter or the requirements of the code of conduct. The entire student code of conduct, including a list of potential sanctions for its violation, can be viewed by visiting the Dean of Student Life's website, and then it has the website, and then it says sincerely.
Okay. I didn't get a letter, but I'm very infuriated as well, because
yeah,
I also know that my fellow students and activists got the letters, and
this wasn't the first time, actually.
Yeah, I know. So this is not the first time. The yeah. first action two mm-hmm. SUSU members, both of them are actually women of color, mm-hmm. were targeted, and they're my friends, and they were targeted and they were threatened with expulsion
and with having to pay ridiculous amounts of fines too.
Yeah, because they were the ones that disrupted this expensive meeting or mm-hmm. you know like this just this action. They were threatened and then they were told to like to just fall in line to go to the office hours, but yet they're not even there, right? Mm-hmm. And then like the administration just hides from us. So they never really want to hear from us.
Yeah.
They never really want to hear from these two. And now the 5 to 6 students that are being threatened. So what do they want? They obviously don't want to hear from us.
Mm-hmm. They want student power to not exist.
Exactly. They want us to fall in line. They want us to keep on paying those high tuition.
Mm-hmm.
So it's infuriating.
Mm-hmm.
What can be done now? What can we do now to what do you think? How can we make, you know, the situation better? Like,
I think specifically for PSU students.
Yeah, specifically.
Yeah.
For PSU, sorry.
Yeah. Everyone in the world should be helping. No.
they should.
For PSU students, I think the best idea would be to join SUSU, or to, if you're already in another student group, to get in contact with SUSU if like you're not already in contact with SUSU, because we're a student union, and so we cover a lot of different struggles, and we have a list of demands, and we're going to keep fighting for those. We're going to we actually have an event coming up February 18th, mm-hmm. And it's called Comply or Resign, and it has to do with our list of demands.
Tell us what those demands are?
Yeah, definitely. So from the Portland State University Student Union, we demand, one, the disarmament of all public safety officers. Arming campus public safety was done without proper consultation of all students, staff, and faculty, and while deliberately ignoring any opposition. Arming campus security poses a life-threatening risk towards students of color, transgender students, mentally ill students, houseless students, and toward all other students belonging to societally marginalized groups. Two, we demand that the university break ties with the food service provider Aramark as soon as possible. The university's relationship to Aramark perpetuates food insecurity for Portland State students. The university's contract with Aramark requires that healthy and cheap food sources like the Green Roots Cafe not be allowed to advertise around the school, and that the food pantry not have any place for promotion and freshman orientation materials. Student access to non-financially straining food sources must take priority over profit. Three, we demand a $15 minimum wage for all campus workers. All campus workers must be able to make a living wage. Portland is in a housing crisis, and in this city, there is no feasible way for somebody to pay for rent, food, bills, and school at $9.25 an hour. Four, we demand that tuition be lowered by lowering administrative salaries. It is unacceptable that while students often choose between buying textbooks and buying food, administrators such as Vim Vivelle live more than comfortably, with $600,000 pay and a house, car, phone, and maid service all paid for. Those are the list of demands. The Comply or Resign event is directly aimed at getting those to the administration again, because they already have it. We took it to the board meeting. The entire board knows our demands.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a direct way to keep fighting for this, because they shouldn't be in these positions of power if they're not willing to comply with what the students have to say, what the students need so that they can keep living.
And just the fact that, like, every day that I'm at school, I can see so many classmates and so many students just, like, working so hard. And I know mm-hmm. that, like, there are so many students that are starving. Like, how are they going to pay for their tuition just to get to school? If they can't even, like, if they're going to the food pantry to get food. And there's not, and, like, part of one of the demands, like, you know, like the administration does not tell you where the food pantry is.
Yeah, I didn't find out till I was in my second term. It was from another student. That's like the only way people find out about the food pantry now is if another student tells you about it.
Yeah, so they will try to squeeze as much profit out of us as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And even like the student of color speak out where they said they want to capitalize on diversity now, like they're bringing all other students of color onto campus and they're trying mm-hmm. to pull in more students of color. And I just feel very uneasy with what's going on with that, because if students of color are around, that could lead to a lot of violence by the campus mm-hmm, officers.
Exactly, yeah.
And even like there is also a club that has started,
PSU Students for Concealed Carry.
Yeah.
So what are they all about?
They want any student to be able to have a gun on their body with like proper permitting and stuff like that. But a lot of their sort of advertising and promotional stuff is very tokenizing. They're yeah. trying to say that, you know, they have all these different marginalized people that are so for concealed carry, when in reality their actual group is only made up of cis white people. That's mm-hmm. that's their group. Mm-hmm. And they've also posted really racist posters that when they first started, it was Concealed Carry that was posting these. And now they're trying to say, we're
and
very
inclusive.
You can see
these all over campus.
Yeah, they like, post the them everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
So you can see all of this stuff all over campus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just setting up a very a very turbulent situation at school mm-hmm. for us to even mm-hmm. learn, because on one hand we've got the administration bringing in these officers to handle people that are armed and then we've got another group that like wants to have a concealed carry campus. That is just like a recipe for disaster on campus. And it's just like, it's just getting really dangerous.
Mm-hmm,
and a lot of the concealed carry, a lot of their, what they've been saying on social media mm-hmm. and things like that has been directed at SUSU mm-hmm. and directed at the Disarm PSU campaign. And a lot of it seems like it's definitely backlash to SUSU mm-hmm. among mm-hmm. other.
Can you give an example of like one of the things?
Or you can't.
I know that there's been some members of SUSU on their mm-hmm. own Twitters have like posted something like a screenshot or like taken a photo of a flyer or something to say, you know, how bad it is and how tokenizing it is and all these different things, and then Concealed Carry's Twitter takes that up as a chance to specifically like go on that person's profile like every day and send them more tweets. Like
personal attacks to this individual.
Yeah, to like, yeah.
And I have one of my friends who's in SUSU, she tweeted something back in like December, I mm-hmm. believe. And all it was that she had lost her Disarm PSU button, and that Concealed Carry like tracked her tweet and responded to her and was like, okay, so why Disarm PSU? And very like, mm-hmm. very much so attacked her. Just they're basically seem to be looking to target SUSU.
Yeah, and then they say there's been a couple of people in SUSU who have interacted with them in person, and they try to say, you know, like, we want this to be an amicable relationship. Like, we're not trying to attack SUSU, but on Twitter, that's exactly what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So.
Hmm. Okay, well, I'm angry enough. so I think that's it for tonight. Thank you so much for joining me with this conversation. It's very important, especially with what you both had to share with what's going on the PSU campus, but also with the forces that are trying to run our lives, mm-hmm. Our academic lives. I definitely feel like there's hope there, especially with the Missouri and then the Claremont mm-hmm. Win that happened with the resignation of, you know, the presidents of those universities.
Yeah.
So I think there's a big chance for us to win.
Mm-hmm. And definitely also a local thing is Lewis and Clark College are going through a lot of racist and transphobic stuff happening on their campus. And if you go to Lewis and Clark, you should definitely be getting involved in that too.
So it's like happening.
Fight against
it. Exactly. It's happening all over all of these universities. Mm-hmm. So please talk to each other, students, and get together. Mm-hmm. And end this BS.
Stand up, fight back.
Exactly. Thank you and good night. Tonight, our engineer was Chris, and I was your host, Nia Nguyen. Join us next week for Bread and Roses again. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Welcome to your Friday. You just listened to a special edition of Bread and Roses. Right here. It might help to slide down the right pot. There you go. Anyways, your Friday edition is coming up here of Hard Knock Radio with Davey D and the boys. It is KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. And coming up is Davey D and the crew and Hard Knock Radio right here at KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Portland Eco Film Festival series at the Hollywood Theater. The film this month is Sunu, screening Thursday, February 11th at 7:30 p.m. in its U.S. premiere. Seen through the eyes of small, midsize, and large Mexican maize producers, Sunu knits together different stories from a threatened rural world. Sunu reveals how maize and everything it gives life to could be lost forever, and how we all could lose the capability to make important choices unless we act soon. Edna Vasquez will perform before the film. Again, that's the U.S. premiere of Sunu as part of the Portland Eco Film Festival on Thursday, February 11th, 7:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Community Acupuncture and Massage, a benefit for political prisoner Mutulu Shakur, Sunday, February the 7th, noon to 4 p.m. at 7 Star Acupuncture in Portland. Dr. Mutulu Shakur was one of the founders of the Black Acupuncture Advisory Association in North America and the Harlem Institute of Acupuncture. Incarcerated for 30 years, Mutulu and his legal team are seeking community and financial support to fight his imprisonment. A group of licensed acupuncturists and massage therapists are offering treatments to our community as a fundraiser. Again, that's of Community Acupuncture and Massage, a benefit for political prisoner Mutulu Shakur, Sunday, February the 7th, noon to 4 p.m. at 7 Star Acupuncture, 436 Southeast 12th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.